Chapter 23, The P3CO. As Rocco Casagrande labored to obliterate the moratorium and clear the path for the United States government to fund a cascade of new gain-of-function experiments, Dr. Fauci used the interregnum to finally rid himself of the pesky NSABB board with its periodic mutinies. On January 9, 2017, HHS announced a new bulwark for vetting gain-of-function risks that dispensed with the NSABB Oversight Committee altogether and replaced it with the HHS Potential Pandemic Pathogen Care and Oversight Framework, also known as P3CO. Under the ironclad control of Dr. Fauci and his confederate Robert Kadlec, Washington Post reporters David Willman and Madison Muller reported that Francis Collins, unnamed NIH officials, and officials from the White House Office of Science and Technology and the National Security Council attended. Under this framework, scientists seeking to perform gain-of-function experiments must first win approval from the P3CO's panel of experts who determine whether the research is worth the risks. Tony Fauci, of course, was the global impresario at gaming expert panels. He spared no effort to ensure that the P3CO process was a sham, installing all the familiar safeguards. And more, to guarantee that none of his pet projects would ever stumble over mere scruples. As an added precaution, the number of members, as well as their names and affiliations, is secret, as are the committee's deliberations and decisions. Secret membership, secret proceedings, secret deliberations, secret results. Professor Ebright told me, the official justification for all this secrecy is to protect proprietary information. But I can tell you that there is no proprietary information in gain-of-function studies, and if there ever were, it would be easy to protect. Dr. Fauci assured the Post that all gain-of-function experiments are done with the highest degree of oversight. He added, to the extent that we can be transparent, that the system would allow us to be transparent, we go overboard to be transparent. As it turns out, Dr. Fauci was engaging in less than transparent technology transfers to the Chinese military while shielding the same activities from the American public behind a shroud of intense secrecy. In August of 2021, Collins promised the Post to publish the names of the review committee officials so as to achieve the kind of transparency that the public expects. He never did. The only publicly known member and the chair of the HHS P3CO committee is Dr. Christian Hassel, Kadlec's Deputy Assistant Secretary for Preparedness and Response. When Dr. Hassel briefed minority staffers from the Congressional Energy and Commerce Committee in the summer of 2021, he refused to provide the names of his fellow P3CO panel members. However, he admitted that all review committee members were from the NIH Office of the Director. When the committee staff formally requested that HHS provide the names and affiliations of all members of the HHS P3CO review committee, HHS provided some of the NIH names, but on a confidential basis, citing personal security concerns. It's fair to speculate that Drs. Fauci and Collins may have entrusted Dr. Hassel with this sensitive position precisely because he is a master of discretion, a word I use here as a euphemism for ass covering. Hassel is the bioweapons habitue who established his reliability at HHS while serving as the FBI's lab director during the botched 2002 anthrax investigation. Critics accused Hassel of conducting the federal whitewash to unfairly frame Fort Detrick scientist Dr. Bruce Ivins, a strategy that effectively exonerated Bob Cadillac's patrons and business partners, the El Hebri, and other possible culprits from the United States military and national labs managed by Battelle. As I documented extensively in The Real Anthony Fauci, the El Hebri and Cadillac himself reaped rich profits from the anthrax attacks in both lucre and expanded power. Cadillac gave the El Hebri, his former employers and business partners, an ironclad monopoly on anthrax vaccine production from the national stockpile, which Cadillac controlled after Secretary of Defense William Cohn mandated the El Hebri's shoddily tested, ineffective, and horrendously dangerous anthrax vaccines in 1997 for all 2.5 million American military personnel. Advocacy groups say the jab caused injuries to tens of thousands of United States soldiers illegally forced to take the deadly vaccine. Gulf War syndrome affects 175,000 to 250,000 of the nearly 700,000 troops deployed from 1990 to 1991 to the Gulf War theater of operation, and an unknown number of veterans who received anthrax vaccines from 1997 when vaccinations recommenced. Hassell spent 9 years at DuPont as a senior research chemist before joining the technical staff of the DOE, Los Alamos National Laboratory, as an intelligence analyst with the Department of Energy Field Intelligence Element. He served under Fort Detrick's commander, David Franz, on the Iraq Survey Group in Baghdad, an international team organized by the Department of Defense and the CIA to engage in the wild goose chase for weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. He went on to serve DOD as Deputy Assistant Secretary for Chemical and Biological Weapons. Hassell is also a notorious operator in a bioweapons fraternity lousy with questionable characters. During the Trump administration, a whistleblower charged Hassell with surreptitiously soliciting his crony Cadillac for $100 million in government funding for some chummy bioweapons contractors of his acquaintance, who Hassell himself admitted were, quote, in trouble for shady dealings, illegal accounting, and lack of accountability, end quote. Hassell's allegedly less elastic ethics and his brassy spirit of innovation fueled his rise through the ranks of the bioweapons agencies and won him Dr. Fauci's endorsement as chair of the P3CO panel. But in case all of these structural safeguards were insufficient to rig the P3CO system in his favor, Dr. Fauci had embedded a final foolproof loophole that rendered the P3CO utterly dysfunctional. Dr. Fauci gave himself the option of strategically ignoring the process altogether. Under P3CO procedures, the director of each agency funding this research, namely AID and NIH, must identify those grant applications and research proposals that qualify for P3CO review and forward them to the committee. In the years that followed, Drs. Fauci and Collins effectively nullified the entire P3CO process simply by declining to forward gain-of-function projects to the P3CO committee for review. Professor Ebright told me that in the 3.5 years of the P3CO framework, Drs. Fauci's and Collins's agency forwarded only 3 out of several dozen qualifying research proposals to the committee for risk-benefit assessment, and 2 of these were older studies already in the process pipeline. As Dr. Ebright explained, Drs. Fauci and Collins decided to thumb their noses at the process. There were there were between 1 and 4 dozen studies that met the criteria and should have been forwarded. 2 were grandfathered. They forwarded only 1. Because of the secrecy, we do not know the outcome of any reviews. Robert Kadlec, who oversaw the panel and served as the Trump administration's assistant HHS secretary for preparedness and response, confirmed to a Washington Post reporter that Fauci and Collins had forwarded no more than 3 or 4 projects to P3CO for review between 2017 and 2020. In August 2021, at a time when several of his high-level collaborators began distancing themselves from Fauci's and Collins' knavery, Kadlec derisively belittled the process that the Defense Department paid him to manage. Quote, they were grading their own homework, end quote. Kadlec added that in any case, his review committee's capabilities were not robust enough to make sure that bad things don't happen. He added that, frankly, we didn't have the scientific wherewithal. As the Wuhan lab leak controversy became heated, even Christian Hassel began backpedaling away from the project Dr. Fauci had entrusted him to administer. We only completed 2 reviews, he confessed under questioning by the NIH's National Science Advisory Board for Biosecurity on January 23, 2020, adding that a 3rd project had been received by the committee but never reviewed. Hassel suggested the lack of reviews reflected Dr. Fauci's penchant for narrowly defining gain-of-function research worthy of review. I'll just probably be more frank than maybe appropriate. I think that's too narrow, Hassel confided. My view on this thing is don't use too fine a filter. There is no record that Hassel expressed this view at any time before the NSABB called him to task at the outset of the COVID pandemic. The horse by then had already bolted from the stable. Inside the NIH, which funded such research, the P3CO framework was largely met with shrugs and eye rolls, a longtime agency official told Vanity Fair. If you ban gain-of-function research, you ban all of virology. Ever since the moratorium, everyone's gone wink, wink, and just done gain-of-function research anyway. NIH's peculiar institutional ethos tends to richly reward initiative in ass-covering. Hassel now serves as a senior scientific advisor at HHS in the Biden administration. NIH Director Francis Collins is a song and dance man, fond of posting homemade videos of his cringe musical performances. He demonstrated a comparable gift for metaphorical soft shoe when in 2021, a Washington Post reporter asked him to disclose how many gain-of-function projects he and Dr. Fauci had funded since they financed Kawaoka and Fauci's successful efforts to teach bird flu to kill ferrets in 2012. The Post reporter had recently identified about $48.8 million in grants for at least 18 gain-of-function projects that won NIH funding between 2012 and 2020. Collins would only confirm grants for 2 projects in 2018 and declined to give a total number, evasively claiming, quote, the answer would hinge on how the work was defined in a given year, end quote. So, not only is the term, quote-unquote, gain-of-function fluid, but the definition changes by the year. That's the end of chapter 23. I just want to remind everybody that if you haven't read this book on your own, it's fully sourced. Every chapter has endnotes, and you can look those all up, and there's internet links and all of that for all his resources and sources and reference materials. I would highly recommend you doing your own deep dive in that. And you can get these books, of course, you know, you can buy them or you can get them at the library. So anyway, that's just an aside. We're going to go on to chapter 24. I just want to say one more little note when I was reading back here of, it seems like this part right here is pretty current. I mean, I find that it's paralleling what's going on in the news today about the Wuhan stuff with Rand Paul, I think today on Capitol Hill, interviewing Fauci. So you might want to check into that. It's probably on C-SPAN. Yeah, that's all I guess I was going to say. There was something there, but I missed it. That's okay. All right, chapter 24. Peter Daszak Act makes EcoHealth the laundromat through which the Pentagon, spooks, and public health technocrats funnel money and bioweapons technology to China. Apparently, to obscure his continued gain-of-function dallying during the Obama moratorium, Dr. Fauci outsourced some of his most controversial experiments offshore to China's biosecurity laboratory in Wuhan, a safe distance from nosy White House and State Department officials and busybodies like Lipsitch and Ebright and their sanctimonious meddlers from the Cambridge Working Group. Apparently, to further obscure the links between NIH and the illegal research, Dr. Fauci laundered the Wuhan lab grants through a British-born zoologist and bioweapons fanboy, Peter Daszak, and his small New York-based wildlife conservation group, EcoHealth Alliance. Dr. Fauci had been building relationships with both Daszak and Wuhan lab officials, scientists, and technicians for over a decade. He had proven himself an open, generous spigot of federal funding to the Wuhan Institute of Virology's WIV's leading researchers by co-funding their gain-of-function studies in partnership with EcoHealth Alliance, the Chinese military, and the Chinese Communist Party. Despite the opacity at the WIV and the Chinese government's laissez-faire safety protocols and resistance to outside control or supervision, the NIH partnered with the National Science Foundation of China to pour funding into Xi Zhengli's dangerous alchemies. Since 2011, the NIH had funded at least 60 scientific projects at the Wuhan lab, comprising almost 63% of all NIAID's historical funding for gain of function. Dr. Fauci, in what could be asserted is a questionable pattern, passed most of these payments through Daszak's group. Since the biosecurity era's dawn, the dodgy Dr. Daszak had emerged as one of the key facilitators of bioweapons research at the peculiar nexus where the secretive ambitions of global pharmaceutical conglomerates and U.S. military intelligence and health security technocrats merge with their Chinese counterparts. Daszak and his NGO, EcoHealth Alliance, became a conduit through which NIH and the United States military and spy agencies committed tens of millions of dollars to weaponize pathogens at Chinese laboratories. Daszak is the son of Ukrainian former World War II British POW Bowdoin Daszak. As the war ended, Bowdoin fled across Russian lines to escape Stalin. The British took him as a prisoner of war and sent him to the UK. There, British officials released him into the UK population, probably because deporting him to Ukraine would have led to his execution. Bowdoin married Ruth Alice Mary Walton, a British citizen, and worked in Hill's Biscuit Factory in Tameside, Greater Manchester, England. Ruth gave birth to Peter in 1965. Bowdoin died on January 28, 1996. In 1984, Peter attended University College of North Wales, Bangor, where he earned a degree in zoology, graduating in 1987. He completed his doctorate in parasitology from the University of East London in 1994, specializing in parasites that attack reptiles and amphibia. In 1997, he published a paper, ironically, as a co-author with British gastroenterologist Dr. Andrew Wakefield. EcoHealth began its existence in 1971 under the name Wildlife Trust, a conservation group bent on preserving wild places. In September 2010, the organization rebranded itself EcoHealth Alliance. Under DAZAC's direction, EcoHealth quickly found a niche in the emerging pandemic preparedness enterprise by expanding its mission to include inventorying animal diseases that might jump to humans at the interface where settler encroachments intrude on traditional wilderness. DAZAC apparently realized a fact of life that I could have told him after many decades running the Waterkeeper Alliance, an international clean water advocacy group that I co-founded. Money is hard to come by in the ecosystem conservation racket. Early in the game, DAZAC intuited that there were richer rewards in biowarfare, bioterrorism, archiving, and especially creating deadly pathogens. The NIH Fogarty Center began funding DAZAC's gain-of-function research as early as 2005. That year, DAZAC co-authored a study with WIV's chief scientist, Shi Zengli. Bats are natural reservoirs of SARS-like coronaviruses. Shi Zengli had ignited a career in virology by being the first to link the 2003 SARS virus to Chinese bat coronaviruses. DAZAC and Shi seem to have hit it off from the outset. He directed a steady stream of United States government funding her way, and he appears as co-author on several of Shi's key gain-of-function papers over the next 15 years. NIH's Fogarty Center, NIH itself, NIAID, and USAID used EcoHealth Alliance as a conduit through which they co-funded Shi's studies along with the Chinese government. In December 2006, the collaborators produced a second seminal paper, which Shi's colleague Lin Fa Wang, Review of Bats and SARS. Together, these two publications would lay the foundation for the subsequent flood of gain-of-function experiments on Chinese bat coronaviruses. As the money poured in, DAZAC recalibrated EcoHealth's flight path away from conservation and toward the more lucrative enterprise of archiving the world's potential bioweapon pathogens and using biological manipulation and engineering to amplify their weapons potential. In his public explanations, DAZAC promoted his new interest as a path for developing vaccines and predicting pandemics. However, he sometimes framed his grant applications with greater candor, promising funders new opportunities for weapons procurement.
Excuse me.
DAZAC enthusiastically explained the highlight of his new research focus in an October 2008 grant proposal to HHS obtained by The Intercept. And it's a quote, "Two of these newly emerged viruses, HEV and NIV, NIFA virus, are not only novel discoveries, they are also BSL-4 agents that possess several biological features that make them highly adaptable for use as bioterror agents." End quote. NIAID seemed enthralled with EcoHealth's new research trajectory. DAZAC received some 23 NIH grants between 2005 and 2014, several emanating from Dr. Fauci's institute. In 2008, NIAID gave DAZAC a five-year $2.6 million grant to study the risk of viral emergence from bats, enabling the daring duo, DAZAC and Shi, to double down on their dangerous dabbling. In May 2014, as the clamor of public criticism against Dr. Fauci's GOF, gain of function, ensorcelments amplified, and 5 months before the White House imposed its moratorium, NIAID ordered another 5-year grant of $3.7 million to EcoHealth Alliance for a series of studies DASOC called, quote, Understanding the Risk of Coronavirus Emergence, end quote. DASOC would use this funding during the Obama moratorium to continue his labors collecting weapons potential viruses from bat feces and funding Chinese and U.S. scientists to enhance those viruses to more effectively infect and kill human beings. Over the next 4 years, he launched multiple projects that, despite being flagged by NIH program officers as including gain-of-function research subject to the moratorium, somehow escaped review. The evidence suggests that NIH's gatekeepers, Drs. Fauci and Collins, simply waived DASEC's proposals past the regulatory finish lines. DASEC's group also became the preferred vector through which United States military, security, and intelligence agency began laundering money to China for gain-of-function research. In 2016, DASEC also received a $2.2 million contract from the Department of Homeland Security's National Biosurveillance Integration Center. DASEC's critics have condemned this particular project as a naked propaganda enterprise. The Organic Consumers Association described the proposal as, quote, more hype and PR than science, end quote. DHS paid DASEC to recruit a network of subject matter experts, presumably DASEC's cronies from the Guild of Mercenary Virologists, into a so-called ground-tooth network that would support official narratives in the event of a pandemic. Critics claim that this roster includes many of the independent experts from, quote-unquote, independent experts from DASEC subsequently mobilized to tell the world that the COVID-19 lab leak hypothesis was a crazy conspiracy theory. These are the same experts who, I guarantee you, were being used as sources for the New York Times, CNN, NPR, Washington Post, and the AP, charged Wisconsin Congressman Mike Gallagher in May 2021. So he said that. These were the same experts he was caught saying. Here's the quote. Think about how insane this is. The federal government is paying scientists to combat disinformation, but they're basically feeding bogus information to the media, which is spreading a crazy narrative and not even looking into the remarkable coincidence that the Wuhan Institute of Virology happens to be located where this entire pandemic started, end quote. His growing dependence on bioweapons research made DASEC a carnival barker for gain of function. He pitched his schemes to military, police, public health agencies, to vaccine developers, and to private companies as far-sighted investments with potentially extravagant profits. On February 12, 2016, at the height of the Obama moratorium, DASEC took to the National Academy's press to call for a government-sponsored propaganda barrage to promote funding for gain-of-function research, predicting that the venture would yield rich returns. Quote, we need to increase public understanding for the need for medical countermeasures such as a pan-coronavirus vaccine. A key driver is the media, and the economics will follow the hype. We need to use that hype to our advantage to get to the real issues. Investors will respond if they see profit at the end of the process, end quote. DASEC turned out to be prescient. In 2022, the financial returns from COVID-19 vaccines would exceed DASEC's most ambitious projections, with Pfizer alone forecasting $54.5 billion in vaccine sales for 2022 and Moderna promising $38.7 billion in vaccine receipts for that year. In August of 2022, Moderna sued Pfizer for patent infringement, demanding a share of Pfizer's profits from its COVID vaccine. Likewise, NIH sued Moderna for failing to list NIH scientists on its patent application, potentially denying Dr. Fauci's deputies their rich shares in COVID vaccine royalties. With the principals battling over their cuts of the windfall, public health took a back seat. In retrospect, it's probable that Dazek's comparatively piddling investment in gain-of-function research laid the pipeline for this historic gusher. In February 2018, 2 years after penning that article, Dazek spoke at a two-day conference of virologists at the World Health Organization headquarters in Geneva. Dazek joined Bill Gates on stage to raise the specter of an impending pestilence that both men called Disease X. According to the Wall Street Journal, the term meant to capture what scientists had warned about for decades, a novel pathogen with no known treatment or cure that would likely originate in animals, jump to humans, and start spreading silently and quickly. Scientists couldn't predict the precise genetic makeup of the pathogen or when it would strike, but they knew it would come. End quote. In April 2018, the Washington Post also printed a shrill yet adoring propaganda tract under the headline, quote, Bill Gates calls on U.S. to lead fight against a pandemic that could kill 33 million, end quote. The day after the Post story ran, Marianne DeBacker, a board member of the EcoHealth Alliance, emailed Peter Dazek. Any connections with Bill Gates we could reactivate given this perfect alignment and mission? Dazek responded, regarding Gates and Google, we have good connections at both orgs, where we'll definitely be reaching out to them again. Ever since the Ebola breakout, Gates Foundation are now getting more into pandemic preparedness. End quote. 2 months later, on June 12, 2018, EcoHealth Alliance announced it was joining Microsoft's AI for Earth program. Microsoft's collaboration with EcoHealth Alliance included a grant of an undisclosed amount for the goal of putting an end to the pandemic era. Dazek's goal of putting an end to the pandemic era was ironic in light of the fact that his critics now believe that he played a key role in launching it. The deal also gave Dazek access to Microsoft's computational resources as well as collaboration with other teams, leveraging AI tools to scan millions of scientific articles and automatically extract relevant information. Dazek ended his frightening prognostication at the February 2018 event with a self-serving plea for funding that somewhat odorized his pitch as a protection racket. It's our expertise and multidisciplinary approach that stands between you and the next pandemic. This sort of plagola helped cement EcoHealth as a laundromat through which government agencies could discreetly funnel money to Chinese scientists. To the extent that the government agencies fretted about the unsavory optics of funding bioweapons development in China, EcoHealth served as a discreet intermediary for obscuring the expanding resources that U.S. agencies were committing to that enterprise. Some of his government partners may have seen Dazek as a potential scapegoat in case these reckless experiments went south. And when they inevitably did, Dazek sure enough became the patsy. As the money poured in, Dazek discovered that he was more than a zoologist. He was a natural promoter. He spent his work days conferring by phone with local research scientists immersed in field and lab work in distant lands, kibitzing with government funders, and pitching his high-risk research proposals to NIH, NIAID, the Defense Threat Reduction Agency, DTRA, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, DARPA, and the CIA's investment fund in Qtel. Oh boy. Dazak Regeld, Vanity Fair. Reporter Catherine Eban, with tales from years honing his elevator pitch to Washington, D.C. elites on the Capitol's cocktail circuit. He cultivated his government connections over hors d'oeuvres and occasionally burnished his credibility by sitting beside Dr. Anthony Fauci for panel presentations. Since 2007, NIAID alone has provided 24 grants to EcoHealth totaling $14,444,702. But Drs. Fauci and Collins were not the only actors funding the dangerous science in Wuhan. NIH was only Dazak's third largest funder. CIA cut out USAID was number one. And DOD was number two. The Chinese BSL-4 lab served as a reservoir for tributaries of U.S. government funding, which in itself is concerning as EcoHealth did not publicly disclose those grants until 2020. Therefore, any search on the public database, usaspending.gov, would not show EcoHealth's funding of bioweapons research in China's laboratories. Dazak's gift at extracting funding paid off handsomely. Between 2004 and 2022, he wheedled nearly $16 million just from the Department of Health and Human Services, according to federal funding records obtained by The Intercept. Most of these millions came from NIAID grants. By 2022, Dazak had received over $118 million in grants and contracts from federal agencies, and EcoHealth Alliance had an annual income of over $16 million, more than 90% of the moolah in the form of government grants. Dazak had expanded his client list to include Big Pharma, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and most of the central players in biowarfare. Dazak's funders included the Defense Department, the Department of Homeland Security, BARDA, the Department of Commerce, the Department of Agriculture, the Department of Interior, USAID, the National Science Foundation, which has a long and murky relationship with the CIA, the United States Department of Energy, and the China-U.S. Collaborative Program on Emerging and Reemerging Infectious Diseases. DARPA, an agency that descended from Operation Paperclip and seeks to cultivate technologies that serve as force multipliers, likes to deny that it funded gain-of-function in Wuhan. In fact, the agency used various subterfuges to hide its involvement. But as Paul Thecker shows in the Disinformation Chronicle, DARPA was deeply entangled with Wuhan and EcoHealth Alliance. Wow. Dazak also partnered with academic institutions, including UC Davis, the NIAID-funded University of North Carolina, the University of Texas Medical Branch at Galveston, and Peter Hotez's Baylor University. These institutions also served as vectors through which NIH and USAID hid their funding of controversial work in the Wuhan lab. By far, Dazak's largest funding pool was the CIA surrogate, the United States Agency of International Development, USAID. I'm sorry. I'm just like, wow. I'm going to take a break here for a second. I can't believe all of this going on. I mean, when you digest his book, it's just, each chapter is so full of this, and you just think, wow. Okay, Here we go. That's my editorializing. By far, DAZAC's largest funding pool was the CIA surrogate, the United States Agency for International Development, USAID. Through USAID, the CIA funneled nearly $65 million in PREDICT funding to EcoHealth between 2009 and 2020. I don't remember what PREDICT is. I'd have to go back. There's also a glossary in here and a character listing of all of these characters. Okay. DOD was the NGO's second largest donor, given $38 million during the same period. The majority of that Pentagon lucre, $34.6 million, came from the Defense Threat Reduction Agency, DTRA, a Pentagon branch tasked to counter and deter weapons of mass destruction and improvised threat networks. DTRA funneled money to EcoHealth Alliance for various projects relevant to bioweapons development, including gain-of-function experiments and collecting the pathogens that cause bat-borne zoonotic diseases. Some of these grants appear to be ongoing. EcoHealth provided direct support for every aspect of gain-of-function research, paying for the collection of viruses with weapons potential from Eastern Europe to Southern Asia and Africa, and financing experiments by U.S. and Chinese scientists in Wuhan to amplify their virulence. DAZAC touted EcoHealth's accomplishments and promoted gain-of-function in lectures and published articles. DAZAC frequently co-authored papers with CIA officer Michael Callahan, Ralph Barrick, Xi Zengli, and with their Chinese colleagues. DTRA also funded the development of molnupiravir for Merck. Molnupiravir. Although DAZAC was also funding studies at U.S. bioweapons labs in other countries, Wuhan was his flagship. EcoHealth provided funding for the vast majority of publications relevant to gain-of-function and coronaviruses that emerged from the WIV, or the Wuhan Institute of Virology, whatever. These papers document how American Ingenuity and NIAID, or NIAID, funding gave the U.S. or the Chinese their head start in production of pandemic weapons. And then it shows this the end of the chapter, and it shows at the end this image, EcoHealth Alliance federal funding breakdown from 2004 to 2022, and it's a pie chart. Hi, Maggie. Hello, Molly. She just woke up and she's whining, and now she's on tape. Let me pause here if I can. No, she's fine. Okay, so the pie chart is showing the funding, the federal funding breakdown, and it has a USAID $53,684,350 as the largest part of the pie, and DOD getting $42,166,126, with HHS getting $15,591,823. And then there's a small chunk that goes to USDA, DOI, DOC, DHS, and NSF. So it's really broken down, so you can see how the federal funding was managed. And where am I? Let's see. Oh, hello, Molly. I think I'll do one or two more chapters since there are just a few pages here. Chapter 25. Come here. Sit down with me. Chapter 25. DAZAC in the moratorium. DAZAC's heyday arrived when the Obama moratorium from 2014 to 2017 inadvertently made the Wuhan lab the global mecca of gain-of-function research. In a March 31st, 2022 investigative report, Vanity Fair contributor Catherine Eban reviewed the contents of more than 100,000 EcoHealth Alliance documents, including meeting minutes, and internal emails and reports, most of which predate the COVID-19 pandemic. According to Ebon, those documents chronicle a disturbing glimpse at the back room of Dazac's carnival operation, including murky grant agreements, flimsy NIH oversight, and pursuit of government grants by pitching increasingly risky global research. On May 27, 2014, 5 months before Obama declared the moratorium, and with the fierce debate over NIH's gain-of-function capers already boiling, NIAID agreed to fund a 5-year, $3.7 million EcoHealth Alliance study called Understanding the Risk of Bat Coronavirus Emergence. EcoHealth Alliance lists the WIV and the Wuhan University School of Public Health as sub-grantees. Dr. Fauci's agency allowed this research to proceed throughout President Obama's moratorium and made payments to Dazac in 2015 of $630,445. 2016, he got $611,000. In 2017, it was about $597,000. I'm kind of rounding. And 2018, $581,646. In 2019, $661,980. From this grant, NIH laundered at least $665,000 through Dazac directly to Xi Zengli between 2014 and 2019. NIH awarded a second 5-year grant called Understanding Risk of Zoonotic Virus Emergence in Emerging Infectious Disease Hotspots of Southeast Asia in August 2020. In August 2022, NIH suspended this grant, citing refusals by Dazac and his Chinese scientists to share their research, notebooks, study results, and genomic data with NIH as required by federal law. But later in 2022, NIH lifted the suspension and reactivated the grant. In 2016, EcoHealth presented the United States Defense Threat Reduction Agency, or DTRA, with a grant proposal entitled Understanding the Risk of Bat-Borne Zoonotic Disease Emergence in Western Asia. That grant proposal, part of the Gates Foundation's One Health program, which funds research on viral spillovers from animal populations, promised to sample bats in more than 12 West Asian nations, including China and Georgia, inventory the viruses they carry, and assess the risk of bat-borne zoonotic disease emergence. Viruses, the researchers suggested they might find, included SARS and MERS coronaviruses, as well as deadly Ebola, Marburg, and Nipah viruses. Or Nipah, I don't know. It's N-I-P-A-H, not with an F. Which coincidentally are very good viral candidates for weaponization. Chapter 26, Nothing Useful, in quotes, nothing useful. Dr. Fauci justifies his dangerous gain-of-function preoccupation by arguing that his experiments are necessary to protect Americans from accidental or deliberate pandemics. His critics, however, point out that 20 years of gain-of-function deviltries have yielded virtually nothing useful to humanity while subjecting the world to an inevitable hazard that one of his souped-up microbes might escape and precipitate global calamity. The biosecurity agenda's champion, Dr. Thomas Inglesby, added a terse but revealing comment summarizing the overwhelming scientific consensus about the risks and rewards of gain-of-function research to his 2016 warning about Dr. Fauci's activities. Quote, "The benefits of gain-of-function research are overstated and primarily reflect the opinions of proponents of gain-of-function research." End quote. In 2017, Dr. Mark Lipsitch of the Harvard School of Public Health's Communicable Disease Center echoed Inglesby's pessimistic assessment. During an interview with the New York Times, Lipsitch observed that Dr. Fauci's NIAID experiments, quote, have given us some modest scientific knowledge and done almost nothing to improve our preparedness for pandemics, and yet risked creating an accidental pandemic, end quote. In his testimony of the United States Senate Subcommittee on Emerging Threats and Spending Oversight on August 22, 2022, Stephen Kwai, MD, PhD, considered the historical benefits of gain-of-function science during questioning. An author, scientist, and businessman, Dr. Kwai is the founder of Seattle-based Atossa Therapeutics. In looking at the collected gain-of-function research over approximately two decades, I have found no findings that could reasonably be considered to have helped in either the COVID pandemic or other smaller epidemics, end quote. It is not being done for practical purposes, adds bioweapons doyen Professor Richard Ebright, a member of the Institutional Biosafety Committee of Rutgers University and the Working Group on Pathogen Security of the State of New Jersey. It has produced no actionable results, no results that would, for example, be useful for preventing or responding to a pandemic. Professor Ebright is Board of Governors Professor of Chemistry and Chemical Biology at Rutgers and Laboratory Director at the Weizmann Institute of Microbiology. In an August 2021 interview, Ebright described to investigative journalist Paul Thacker, who has published groundbreaking research on Dr. Fauci's gain-of-function witchcraft, the short-sighted and venal economic impulse that he suggests fuels gain-of-function research. Here's the quote. It is being done for career advancement. The GOF, or the gain-of-function experiments, are simple to perform. They are highly publishable and highly fundable. Developing an antiviral drug typically has a timeline of 20 years and a probability of success of 1 in 20. In contrast, gain-of-function experiments can take just 6 months, and the probability of success would be nearly 100%. With gain-of-function, one can move very quickly to results, no publication, and then to a next grant, end quote. For infectious diseases, Ebright added, most research is supported by the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, or NIAID. The typical NIAID research grant has a 5-year term, which means one cannot discover and develop a new drug or vaccine in a single grant term. Ebright warned in 2015 that the only tangible impact of gain-of-function work was the creation in a lab of a new non-natural risk. But in 2017, the Trump administration seemed to ignore Anthony Fauci and his putative boss, NIH Director Francis Collins, ending the Obama moratorium, even as Collins justified the move by trotting out the tired old absurdity that no one in the American media ever seemed to question. Quote, gain-of-function research is important in helping us identify, understand, and develop strategies and effective countermeasures against rapidly evolving pathogens that pose a threat to public health, end quote. Leading scientists ridiculed Collins's claim. Johns Hopkins Stephen Salzberg, the Bloomberg Distinguished Professor of Biomedical Engineering and the director of the Center of Computational Biology, wrote, I can't allow this to go unchallenged. This research is so potentially harmful and offers such little benefit to society that I fear that NIH is endangering the trust that Congress places in it. End quote. EcoHealth Alliance's former vice president and senior scientist, Dr. Andrew Huff, made the salient observation that I can't think of a single historical instance when gain-of-function studies have prevented, much less stopped, a pandemic or contributed significantly to a treatment or cure. Look what happened with COVID-19, which began in Wuhan, the epicenter for global coronavirus gain-of-function research. And yet, if we are to believe that the disease emerged naturally, they were unable to predict COVID's emergence or develop a vaccine or drug to treat COVID prior to its emergence. How is that a success story? The next chapter will look at the risks of lab leaks based on historical evidence. And that must be where we're going to stop, which is called, it's chapter 27, I'll do it next time, Historic Accidents, Infections, and Escapes at Biolabs. I think that's a longer chapter, and I think I'll have to, I'll do that, start that in the next section. All right, wow. There's lots to digest in these chapters. I hope you're enjoying the ride, if you will. We are about halfway through the book at this point, closing in on it. Appreciate you listening. Hope you're enjoying. Take care.